Welcome to You've Got This with Sarah Hammaker, a podcast to encourage and equip moms along their parenting journey. Join Sarah each week as she interviews dads and moms like you and discusses the joys, challenges, and rewards of raising kids.
Hi, and welcome to this week's You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I'm discussing brain development with Dr. Katherine Jackson, or Dr. J, as she's known. She's America's number one brain psychologist, and I am so excited to talk to you today, Dr. J. So welcome to my program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, as we were talking a little bit before we started recording this podcast, I'm a mom. I have four children. Now they're between 11 and 17, and also a four-year-old foster daughter in my home when we're recording this. And I've always been fascinated by the brain development of children. I mean, you can kind of see it as the kids grow and as their brain develops and as they are able to learn new things. But I have found it very helpful as a parent to kind of, you know, think about, oh, well, what is my toddler capable of? What is my preschooler capable of? Now, I know all kids are different, but there are some general, I think, brain development milestones. And I'd love to start our conversation with, if you could just kind of give us a rundown of those.
You're right. All kids are different. And kids who are, like, typical kids, I guess is the best word to use. I don't think there's a normal. Usually follow a set path of different things that go on or hit these different types of milestones. So the early development years is from birth to about age 7. Some people say age 5, age 7, whichever. They have different things kind of going on, especially in those beginning years up to age 2 or 3. And so a lot of the brain development, first of all, kids come out with all of the neurons and such that they're going to usually have. But the important thing with those very young years up to age 3 is what we are doing to cultivate the connections between the neurons and the synaptic activity. And so usually when kids are younger, from a brain perspective, some of those markers, you're just really trying to develop and get them used to the environment, get them used to language, get them used to kind of using their hands and developing some of the motor skills. So that's the really younger phase. So it's mostly based off of the sensory motor skills when they're really young.
Mm-hmm.
Then later we move like from 2 or 3 to up to about age 7. And so we just want to kind of build on that, and you're really focusing on those things that we just talked about or I just mentioned. Plus, you're going to start building in a lot more of the social and emotional parts of their brain. Because a lot of growth occurs during about age 3. When we first start out, you know, we only have like 25% of our adult brain in time.
Oh, okay.
And then when we get to around age 3, we're at about 80%. And by the time kids are age 5, they're at about 90% of the adult brain.
Wow.
So a lot is happening during those years. So we want to make sure that we are cultivating that. If they're not getting kind of like the proper environment and the proper stimulation, sometimes you can hinder some of that, and then you're killing, literally, the brain goes through a process of killing off or eliminating, or neurons die, whichever way you want to kind of say it. And if it's kind of like if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So those young years are so crucial to expose them to a great amount of things. So that's about up to age 7. And so I can go into some more about how parents can cultivate that maybe a little later. But once they're in that 7 to about 11 or 12 years of age range, they're able to take in a lot more. You're going to continue what you did in those younger years up to about age 7. But a lot more of the focus will start to turn to their social functioning and the kids are, developing more of their logical thinking. because they can take in a lot more around the age of 7, especially by the time they're 11 or 12. You want to cultivate some of the logical parts of their brain.
Right.
So I don't know if you want me to continue.
Let's pause there, because that was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.
But I had no idea by age, 5 that the kids had 90% of their adult brain. I mean, they sure don't act like it.
But it's more the size of the adult brain.
I know, but just, wow. But it does, I think, kind of all that growth going on kind of behind the scenes, because we can't physically see. We can see them grow. We're like, oh, you need new shoes. Your pants that set in the fall are now, mid-thigh, kind of thing. We can kind of see their physical growth, and we can tell they're going through a growth spurt because, they have, hollow legs and they eat so much. But I guess we don't always realize that accompanying those physical growths, especially when they're little, is all this brain development, like you said, all this creating those pathways and kind of really setting them up for the rest of their life. And we kind of know that, but we don't really know that, I think. And it kind of explains why kids, sometimes toddlers and preschoolers, get so squirrely.
Yes. And they can't handle the emotions when they're younger either. They really need the parents and other adults who are in their lives to help them manage the emotional parts of their brain and how that comes out. And what we see. So when you go to the grocery store and you see a kid throwing a tantrum, they need adults to help them. But sometimes I think, like you said, you see them growing, they're getting growth spurts, they've grown out of their pants, they've grown out of their shoes, and we think they should know how to handle these things, but they don't.
Right, and I think that's been one of the more fascinating things for me, just as a mom and a parent coach, is just the recognition that there are some kids who can figure out how to self-manage without a lot of parental, or school or teacher input. I mean, there are a few kids like that, because I've met them.
I've met them, too.
But on the whole, most of our kids, they have no idea what to do with these big emotions that they have. And all this, kind of behind-the-scenes brain development, it's like they're, developing at warp speed, and they're like, oh, I don't know how, it's like how to figure out how to manage that. So, let's take a pause here before we get into the teenage years, which has their own set of challenges, and talk of a little bit of how can we help cultivate, that brain development and give our kids the tools to have that self-control, that self-regulation that's so important for them to going forward in life.
Yes, for parents who, from birth to like age 11, it's going to be pretty similar, but how it looks will change. So
okay.
I give a lot of different types of tips, and this is not even an exhaustive list of all that to go on, because when we talk about the brain, it's just so much to do.
Yes.
So I just share a few things that parents can probably implement. And do that are easy, most of them free.
That's great.
So something like when you first start out with your child, the bonding phase is very, very important, and being able to attach with your child is very important. So they get a sense of security, and they are learning from parents their cues for everything. And so if you don't have that initial attachment and bond, everything else is kind of hard to, anything else that I say after this will be hard to implement.
Right.
Or the bulk of it. You also want to keep a safe environment, a really nice home environment. People argue and there can be a little bit of chaos, but kids who grow up in that kind of an environment all the time, especially if they're exposed to trauma or if they are exposed to neglect, their brains are much smaller and they don't grow in the same rate as children who come from just like a nice, loving, safe environment where they can be themselves and not be exposed to a lot of chaos. One of my favorite things that I always like to talk about, no matter what I'm talking about related to mental health and brain health, is nutrition. So kids need a lot of different nutrition throughout their lifetime, but especially when they're younger, you want to make sure that they're getting enough water, proteins, healthy fats, healthy carbs, and vitamins and minerals. So just eating a nice, well-balanced diet will help with that. Versus when you hear kids eating a lot of junk food, then they're not getting enough fuel to feed their brain.
Right.
Keeping toxins low, and that's toxins in food like pesticides and mercury, and even toxins in the environment like lead. That's going to be important. And sometimes that's hard to do when you think about people who live in more populated areas where there's more pollution just in the air in general.
Right. Right.
And so we just want to make sure that we're tending to that and trying to have the best environment for the kids and making the best choice. Nothing can be perfect. Parents are just doing the best that they can, but nothing will ever be perfect. And then there's a lot of research showing positive parenting, specifically the authoritative parenting style, gives the best outcomes for every aspect of children's lives, academic, how they learn, their social involvement, how they feel about themselves. So that's a really good parenting style. If parents don't know about it, then they could look into that and see how they can incorporate a lot of the authoritative parenting style. We also want to keep really good relational interactions, not just with the parents, but even the people that you have around your kids a lot. So strong and stable relationships will help to build a really strong, healthy brain. And it teaches kids good social interactions. For younger kids, that early education, so early childhood education, is really key too. And so you want to pick a really good preschool. And I think that a good school throughout their education is important. Because you want to give them good stepping stones in preschool, and then they're in like a really horrible school throughout the rest of their life, and they're not getting enough stimulation, enough challenge to their brain. So picking really good schools or the best schools that are available to you will be good to help build out healthy brain functioning, help with those synaptic activity and brain functioning and connection throughout their whole lifetime. Let's see, parents could help the kids manage emotions, like I mentioned before. When kids are young, they don't, like you said, there's only a handful of kids that I've met that are mature enough to handle their own emotions. And when parents are able to help kids through their emotions, and they learn from parents. So if parents can manage their own emotions, they model and teach their kids how to manage their emotions themselves. And they help them through the emotions, too. And that builds up that part of the brain where we are more social and how we interact and how we deal with rejection and things that are difficult. And so, let's see. I also like reducing screen time. That's something I talk about a lot, too. I don't think little kids should be in front of the screen all the time.
I totally agree, Dr. J.
And I think, well, there's a lot of research. It's not even just what I think that supports how detrimental that is to their brain functioning. And it's an overload of dopamine and other pleasure zones in their brain, and they don't know how to handle when they have to get off of it. So really setting some limits around that. And that's like a lot of the things in those really, really young years leading up to teenage years.
Yeah, and I love what you had said, and what I'm getting from what you said is that we really, as parents and educators, is that we need to take that holistic view of the child.
Yes.
It's not just, you know, read to your child and they'll be fine. Well, that's a great part, but you have to think about their diet and their exercise and their environment and their, you know, limiting their screen time so that their brain has a really good chance to develop fully. Yeah, I love that, because I think that so many times that we neglect one or the other in it, and we think, oh, it's not that big a deal, and it really is. I mean, collectively as a society, you know, but it is a big deal, and it is should be very important that we're giving all these kids the opportunity to, you know, have a safe environment and eat good food and go to good schools. So,
mm-hmm. And the best schools available. You know, everybody can't go to the creme de la creme of schools. They just can't fit everybody in. And so you want to get the best school in your area. But you're right. I mentioned it earlier about the stimulation. Play and stimulation is very important, but I don't think we look at the rest of the holistic thing. So like play, laughing, reading, developing motor skills. So things like even playing with Legos and listening to music and exposing kids to nature, all very important. But we also have to look at all the other things, too.
Right. So we have just a few more minutes left, but let's talk about the teenage brain. Because I have three teenagers in my home right now, and I love them, and they're fantastic. So, and two of them are teenage daughters, and let me tell you, there's not a lot of drama in my house. Just so for my listeners to know, it doesn't have to be crazy drama stuff. But it's been interesting to kind of see. I have a 13-year-old boy and then 15 and 17-year-old girls, and it's been interesting to see the differences in their brains and how they think about things. And I'd love a few minutes on the teenage brain and how we can, you know, help them as they're getting ready to launch into adulthood.
The teenage brain could be its own talk, but I'm going to cram in.
Just a few. I know we don't have time to do a whole. And I'd love, maybe I'll have you back on my show to talk exclusively about teenagers. But for now, I mean, there are some things that we can keep in mind. Doesn't have to. This and listeners know this is not the last word on teenage brains.
Yes. So the beauty about the teenage brain, like I said, by age five, you've got 90% of your brain. And teenage, they're undergoing so much change going from childhood to adulthood. And the funny thing is that the brain is not fully developed and completely finished with the frontal lobe, which is responsible for, like, learning and decision-making, the impulses. It does not finish until we're sometime in our 20s, usually around the age 25, give or take. And so that's why we see so much of the impulsivity with teenagers. Their decision-making sometimes is not where parents really want it to be, and you see a lot more risk-taking behaviors. It's because that frontal lobe is not fully finished. It's not fully developed, and it doesn't finish until we're some point in our 20s.
Mm.
And so people think because teenagers, they look almost like adults, right? They look like really young adults, and they think that they should be able to handle so much more. But teenagers are very susceptible to stress.
So yes.
They still need their parents to help them manage some of the things that are going on, the nuances of what it means to make decisions more adult-like, because we're expecting more adult-like responsibilities from them, and they still need their parents to walk them through that. They're also more susceptible to addictive behaviors because the brain is not fully developed, and if they start getting too much into something, anything like smoking, drugs, alcohol, it could become more addictive because the teenage brain craves more rewards, and dopamines are going all over the place. And when they have to make a decision, especially in something that's unclear, they're going to pick the short-term option that will give them immediate rewards. So that's the teenage brain very, very quickly. There's a lot more to it. But
No, that was great. Thank you so much. And I noticed that. I mean, I noticed, especially what you said about the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, my two teenage daughters are in high school right now, junior and a sophomore. And I've noticed that I really need to, you know, sometimes I need to step in to help them manage that stress because I see that they're putting so much, and they're very responsible, you know, and now they're, you know, the stakes are much higher in high school. They're looking at colleges and starting to think about future and stuff. And, you know, I've had to come and say, I don't think you need to take those many hard classes.
Yes.
Let's not. You know, I actually talk one of my daughters out of taking an AP class, which she can get college credit for, for her junior year, because she wasn't that interested in the subject. And I'm like, if you're not that interested, don't take it, because that would have been three or four AP classes her junior year. I said, no. No. We're not going to do, because I knew how much stress it would create, because how much she would put on her, and she didn't really. I said, it's not that important. Your health, your mental health is more important, and that I think is part of our job as parents, is to help our kids and to go, you don't need to feel obligated to take that class, or you can drop out of this extracurricular activity because you're feeling stressed, or what can I do to help you feel a little less stressed here?
You went right into some of the tips I would have for parents.
Oh, good.
It's like that. You're talking it through. You're helping them not only with the emotional regulation. They can do a lot of it on their own, but sometimes they get into these spaces and they need more help. But you're helping your daughters with decision making too. So talking it through and really prioritizing things, that's a skill that your daughters, your kids, period, are going to need throughout the rest of their lives. And so when kids are going through an emotional time, parents want to not brush it off or say it's no big deal. They want to make sure they're talking to them and creating a space where there's open lines of communication, so that if kids are find themselves in an emotional place or having difficulty making any kind of decision, I think about the risky decisions when I say this, but it can even be something as simple as, should I take 5 AP classes or should I just boil it down to 3, you know?
Right.
So it could be something that simple. And then parents want to help their teams make plans and prepare for and even rehearse specific situations, so that when they find themselves, you know, like with kids and they have to make certain decisions, they've already rehearsed different ways to get out of it, and so they don't succumb to peer pressure.
Yeah. I love that, and I will just say what I've told my kids. I said, look, you can throw me under the bus anytime. You
yes.
can just say, my mean mother will not let me do it, and she will know.
And you be the bad guy.
And
right.
I said, I am happy to be the bad guy anytime that you just need to say no to something. And it doesn't have to be a really horrible thing. It could just be that they really need to come. They're just really, really tired, and they need to come.
Yeah.
You know, use me. And those situations, I am perfectly fine, because, like I tell them, I don't need your friends to like me.
No.
I have my own friends, thank you very much. I do not need teenage friends. And if they think I am the meanest, uncoolest mom, fine.
I'm just going to say one more thing,
because
I know we're running out of time. But kids make mistakes, and when they do, I tell parents to use them as teachable moments instead of lecturing them or neglecting them or alienating them, making them feel completely horrible. We've all made mistakes growing up, and it's a part of growth. And so we want to make sure with that we make that the consequence actually fits, quote unquote, the crime. You don't want to have harsh punishments and making things way too long. I remember when I was younger, I was on punishment for a whole semester. All my friends were gone. They had and the punishment was a little too harsh for the crime, because I didn't get I think I had gotten a D or something.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a little too harsh, and it hurt for the rest of the social year. And my mom learned from it. So
right. Yeah. And I always tell parents, just before we have to wrap up here, I always tell parents that, you know, you don't have to give a punishment in the heat of the moment or a consequence in the heat of the moment.
Yes.
You know, once your kid is older than 3, they have longer-term memory, it's okay. Cool down. So you don't say things like, you are not leaving your room till you're 18 and the kid is 10. I mean, we've, you know, and so we don't do things like punishing for the whole semester and add out of proportion. But you're right, especially for teenagers. Well, I think I'm going to have you back on my show, Dr. J, because I think we have a lot more to talk about. But we have to stop for today. So thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I have been talking with Dr. Katherine Jackson, or Dr. J, America's number one brain psychologist, and you can find out how to connect with her with this podcast. But we've been talking about brain development, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've had fun talking about it. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast of You've Got This with Sarah Hammerker. Sign up to receive notification of new podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerker.com. Until next time, remember, parenting might be hard sometimes, but don't worry, you've got this.